Same material.
I see. Don't you want the sheet?
No. I know it all.
Wow.
There are only about 3 pilgrims.
Really? That's interesting. The curtains?
Leave them closed.
Okay. So, let me listen it.
You are tuned in to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting live from Burnaby Mountain, BC.
Today on Wings, there's an ongoing struggle in countries across the world between women's right and ability to control their own bodies and government control over what women can, cannot, and must do with their bodies, including forced births and forced sterilizations. This program offers a blow-by-blow analysis of an historic victory for the side of choice.
Media, especially women's media, brings women together.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world. Produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
Shortwave is a truly international means of communication. Its radio signals, bounced off the ionosphere, can be received by shortwave radios in far distant parts of the world. FIRE, Feminist International Radio Endeavor, used shortwave to give worldwide coverage to the global women's movement. FIRE played an especially crucial role as activist media covering the United Nations Conference on Population and Development, held in September 1994 in Cairo, Egypt. FIRE producer Maria Suarez explained to Wings that the work began in April in New York at the final preparatory conference for the population meeting. Maria Suarez.
The third preparatory conference was key, because it is there where the states draft the document that will be approved in the final conference and where the main debates take place and where they put in brackets the sentences that are not of consensus and approving the things that they already built consensus upon, so that the women's movement that has been involved in all the conferences knows that this is the main battleground and the final conference is more of a formality and a propaganda thing. So that this is the framework of that third preparatory conference where women knew that we were going to face many opposing forces, especially to what was one of our major objectives in that conference, which was changing the focus of population policies from fertility control and regulation to rights, especially reproductive and sexual rights, and also policies around the empowerment of women to have control and participation in the decision-making. So what happened at that preparatory conference is that the women's movement brought an agenda and lobbied the state delegates to have an influence in that agenda. And I guess FIRE was invited by the Latin American and Caribbean Women's Health Coalition, both because of the work that FIRE had been doing in previous conferences like the Earth Summit in 1992 and also the Human Rights Conference, but also because women have a better understanding of the role that an alternative media, that is activist media, can play to support their agenda, their lobbying, and their efforts in this kind of conference. For example, when the caucus got together to develop its strategies, FIRE was asked to interview Mr. Bigman, who was chairing the main committee where the debates on sexual and reproductive rights were held. And what we wanted to know from him is what was going to be his attitude towards the straight opposition of the Vatican. And what the women wanted him to know through FIRE was that the caucus was not willing to allow the chair of such a meeting to be lax with the Vatican, so that he was not only able to know what the position of the Women's Caucus was, but also feel the strength of a caucus that had assigned me to go and interview on its behalf. I also had to let him know that I wasn't coming as a journalist, but as a communicator involved in the strategies of the Women's Caucus and the Women's Movement. And one of the interesting things about that interview was that he started telling me off the record some stories about how he had learned why women's rights were important to the issue of population. And that's because I always ask women in the interviews, you know, how did you personally get involved? And when I interviewed this man, I also asked him, and he told me the story about his first mission from the government of the Netherlands to Egypt about 25 years ago, and what he was able to learn about the women there.
Now, I understand that you were also able to put together events between women at the conference, and that these events had a kind of catalyzing effect. Would you describe some of that?
Well, at one point, the Latin American Women's Caucus asked Feminist International Radio Endeavor to convene an encounter between the hardest delegation from Central America, which was a woman who was representing the Honduran government, which became famous in that PREPCOM because of their hard positions. The Opus Dei is the equivalent to the Right to Lifers. And she was representing her government, and she had a voice, a very strong voice, in the official plenary of the meeting, whereas the non-governmental organizations did not have a voice at the meeting. So the Women's Caucus wanted her to have to listen to what the women were saying. And at the same time, the caucus wanted to know her logic behind being so strong against women's rights. So I convened this interview with her, and I let her know that it wasn't only my idea, or that it wasn't only for the radio, but that it was for the Women's Caucus. And it was an interview and a debate that took place between the coordinator of the Latin American and Caribbean Women's Health Network, Amparo Claro, from Chile, and this woman from Honduras, who everybody knows as Lorena. The interview started with the issues of the separation between state and church. And I remember that Lorena said that it wasn't that she was following the Vatican's position, but that the Vatican was following her position because she spoke before the Vatican. And Amparo was able to explain that when we said that she was following the Vatican, we meant that the Vatican had the same position for at least 200 years, yet the Honduran government had approved the recognition of women's rights as human rights in the Vienna Conference just 2 years before. So that she had to listen to the arguments of the Women's Caucus, and we were also able to systematize and organize the logic behind her position, which was a logic of the Opus Dei or the Right to Lifers, but also a logic that women were called to be the saviors of humanity, and that the salvation of humanity was based on the sacrifice of women, even if it had to do with sacrifice of our lives in danger of, for example, the need of an abortion where the woman and the fetus life was in danger. She said, if we lose the sacrifice of maternity, all of humanity is lost. And it was very important for us to understand that there was no possibility of dialogue and understanding with such a position, and that with her and the people of her kind that were following the Vatican, we just had to expose them. And there we had an interview that we could use to expose her.
And then there was another type of event?
Well, when the Vatican at that preparatory conference put in brackets the use of condoms, there was an outrage, both by many of the official delegates, but especially by the NGOs listening in to the official meeting. And it was an outrage that I call historical, because they had bracketed safe motherhood, they have bracketed sexual and reproductive rights, but to bracket condoms, even in this day and age with the epidemic of AIDS, was an outrage. And it was like just very close to noontime, there was going to be a lunch break, and we had to have strategies for how to react immediately that afternoon. Because if we lost that one, we were going to lose everything else that was going to be discussed. And so FIRE convened a panel, and so 25 women came together from all the countries of Latin America. And you have to remember that Latin America was the battleground for the support of the Vatican at that conference. The women came together with FIRE's microphone, and they were able also to systematize, to hold their voices, to listen to each other. And alongside the expressions of the outrage with all the arguments about not only AIDS, but how women have the sole responsibility of the use of contraceptives, the women came up with strategies on how to articulate a reaction to that. And it came out very fluidly because they were able to put out the rage and listen to themselves and to each other. And so that an hour and a half later, we had a whole proposal to bring to the Women's Caucus, the Worldwide Women's Caucus, about how to deal with this. And it was very important because it was an event that articulated the possibility of elaborating strategies on the spot and getting them going in the afternoon.
So you think that by it being on media, it was given extra power?
Well, yes, because media brings women together. They would have talked to each other bilaterally in the halls. I don't doubt that women talk to each other outside of media. But media, especially women's media, when we are there with the movement, we create the opportunity of bringing people together, as many as are needed, and in the moment and in the places where it can be most necessary.
Well, I know that you were broadcasting live from this preparatory conference over Radio for Peace International, and you were doing it through telephone lines and were able to get the information out that was not very well known anywhere else. But after you broadcast live, then what did you do with the information?
Well, let me brief you about the live broadcast, because it took place after the panel, the first one. And I brought different women together, and I remember the woman from the U.S. delegation, who is a Puerto Rican, came on the live broadcast, and she expressed her view about the same issue that the Latin American women had talked about in the FIRE panel, and everybody around started applauding. So that besides putting it out on the air on Radio for Peace broadcast, there was an audience right there around the live broadcast. And after the preparatory conference, both the caucus and we at FIRE decided that one of the things that was our responsibility is getting that whole process of the voices of the states, the voices of the Vatican, the voices of the women, the state delegates that we had interviewed, the panel, and some data, indicators about the issues that were discussed, and that we had the responsibility of producing a documentary that would become a popular education instrument that would allow anybody who wasn't there to come in there to that process. And it's called Yemanjá, Spare Us of All Evil. Yemanjá is the goddess of fertility and the goddess of the oceans. And it's a documentary that gives you, with no mediation, the state's voices, the Vatican's voices, the women's voices, the interviews, the panel, parts of the live broadcast, so that anybody could have access to it. And we used it when we had to go back to our countries and lobby our local delegates that were going to Cairo. And we would, for example, in Costa Rica, we went to a meeting with the government, and they said, no, but the Costa Rican government delegate did not bracket safe motherhood. And I just put on the tape, and it was her voice, and it was her voice in the context of the voices of all the Central American delegates, which had sided with the Vatican. And it was very scary for the government here to know that the Costa Rican government was in such a position, and then they sat down to dialogue with us and to see how they could work on a better position.
Wow. Would you just tell me briefly as an aside what safe motherhood is?
Safe motherhood is a definition by the World Health Organization, which is all the conditions that are necessary so that women can develop their motherhood in safety. And it doesn't include reproductive rights before birth, but it's all the conditions of health care, food, and medical, psychological, and physical attention to a woman and her young baby so that she can develop motherhood in safety. And that was placed in brackets, you know.
Was that eventually part of the document that came out of the final event in Cairo?
We worked very hard to get safe motherhood out of brackets. And it came out of brackets very soon because it was ridiculous, the arguments that that same Honduras delegate had used together with the Vatican to say that if you opened up to safe motherhood, it could mean opening up to abortion. The problem that they had is that they were looking into anything and seeing the ghost of abortion in everything, and those were definitions that we had already gained and that we had to fight to hold within the UN definitions, and it stayed, and it's a very important issue.
Okay, so when you got to Cairo, you had to try to set the scene to get your point of view across. What were some of the things that you did?
Well, for one thing, when we got to Cairo now, it was myself and also Nancy Vargas, but we had also strengthened our links with ISIS in Chile and with other women in media because we knew that it was going to require a broader team to do the work that was expected of us, both because of what had been created as an expectation in the PrepCom and because it was a lot more promotion in media between both conferences of the position of the Vatican and the Islamic fundamentalist, and not so much the voices of women, and that's what we had to bring out. So when we got to Cairo, first of all, we found a lot of media. In no conference before had there been 3,000 journalists that made themselves present there to cover that conference. That conference had a very high profile in media, like no other one. The Earth Summit had 2,300. And this one had 3,000. So one of the things that we did is for FIRE, which is an alternative media, to go and visit all the media outlets that were there in their little offices and let them know that we were there, that we were going to do media work for the Women's Caucus, and that they could count on us for any contacts with anybody from the Women's Caucus, but that we were also expecting that they put the voices of women in their media outlets. So it was very interesting because it happened with the Earth Times, which is the official paper of the United Nations in those conferences, with IPS, with French media, media in Spain, media in the U.S. And finally, when the debate started and they would look for the women's voices from the different countries that had positions of opposition or positions of support of what was in the agenda, then they started looking for us to get the women that they wanted. And they would have probably spent 3 or 4 days looking for who they should get and so on, but we were able to provide it, but also demanding of them that they put women's voices and articles that we were writing in their media. So it created a different context for us in being able to collaborate with commercial media.
I understand that you also got involved as a media presence in your own right as a spokesperson for the women's movement position.
The Latin American Women's Caucus was asked by the Christian Science Monitor to select some woman to have a debate with the delegate of the Pope for their shortwave radio program. And the Women's Caucus selected me, and I believe it was because they knew that I was somebody because of the work of FIRE and the links to the movement, somebody who had gathered a lot of information from all angles to be able to debate such a person as the Pope's delegate. It was Bishop McHugh. You all know him in the States because he was on the air more times than anybody else between the PrepCom and Cairo. And I had seen him on television and I had learned his trick. That this was a guy that would look both at the audience straight in the eye when he wanted to get his message to the audience and to the persons he was debating straight in the eyes the whole time. And so when I prepared for that debate, I said, well, I'm going to get this guy to not be able to look at me in the eyes, so that I can look at him, looking at him at the eyes. And this has nothing to do with radio. The audience won't may be able to catch that. But I know how powerful that was when I saw him on television. So we went on to the debate, and it just so happened that 2 hours before the debate on the radio, the plenary session of the official meeting had approved the Article 821, which is the famous article on abortion, which recognizes that abortion should be recognized as a health issue. And he was quite upset. But when he came to the debate, he came with all his prepotencia, and he looked at me straight in the eyes and asked who I was. And when the Christian Science Monitor opened the microphone and asked me to present myself, I said, well, I want you to know that I'm not here only as a representative of the Women's Caucus, but also as a former nun and a present feminist. And that did it to him with the eyes. He couldn't look at me straight in the eyes again. And the debate went on, especially highlighting what the caucus had highlighted. Why is the Vatican even a state within the United Nations? And especially the only state in the world that doesn't have any women or children in it to be so outspoken about women's and girls' rights. And this killed him to the point where he told us that he wasn't there so much as a state, but as a moral and religious force. And if it was moral and religious forces, a lot of other groups should have seats in the United Nations. And the other role that I think we were able to play is that at one point in the middle of the conference, when the debate was very hot at the official conference and at the non-governmental organizations forum, the Women's Caucus organized a press conference. And because the press was wanting to interview individual women from specific countries to counteract their positions with the official delegates' positions, we had decided that we were going to organize a small press conference with 3 women speakers, and then we would move to another room, and each woman had a sign which she posted on her dress that spoke to the country where she came from, so that the media could look for the women that they wanted without having to spend too much time asking who they were and who was from where. And there were about 9 right to lifers that were actually interrupting the interviews between mainstream media and the women's NGOs. Very aggressive. So I looked around and I said, well, there has to be a way in which this can't happen. This is our moment in mainstream media. So I went to the tallest and the most outspoken right-to-lifer, which was a woman from Canada, and I guess I'll never forget her because she was so aggressive. And I went and I very loudly said to her, for Feminist International Radio Endeavor, I want to know what your position is about the right to development, because they were saying that it was development and it shouldn't be reproductive rights and so on. Well, let me tell you that the moment she heard Feminist International Radio Endeavor, she started fighting with my microphone. She wasn't even talking to me. I grabbed that microphone and I pulled it out from my body because I thought she was going to hit it at some point. It was like she was fighting with a feminist tape recorder and a feminist microphone. And I kept asking her questions louder and louder. And they are so fanatic that in less than 3 minutes, I had the 9 of them around my microphone. talking and screaming and bringing their positions, and I would tell them, well, how can you talk about development? Where have you been when we have manifested in front of the Monetary Fund and the World Bank, and I never saw you in the Social Summit, and I never saw you in the Vienna Conference. You've only been here in the Population Conference. Why is that? So that they stayed there for about 45 minutes in this big debate with our program, while the media and the women were able to talk in peace. Let me tell you, Frida, that after 45 minutes they discovered what was happening, and they were so angry that I have a picture where one of them has her hand trying to go towards my camera because they realized that they, but nobody had kept them there, you know. I mean, they were freely onto fighting with the feminist microphone.
So you feel that the Conference on Population and Development was a success from the feminist point of view?
Well, I think that the success is still to be measured in what happens in the implementation for the plan of action. As you know, they decided to postpone the discussion about the amount of funding that will be given for the implementation towards the social summit, so it's still a challenge. And I do believe that in terms of shifting the language of the plan of action for the next 20 years, it was a success for the women because there is a shift in the overall philosophy of the relationship between population and development. The major shift in the philosophy is that now women are not attributed the population explosion, as they call it, but the poverty, lack of development, lack of opportunities, and reproductive and sexual health and reproductive rights and the empowerment of women, and an emphasis of education and empowerment of women and girl children was recognized as a major policy. I say that it's a partial success because it's in the implementation and in our ability so that all women know what these new rights are for them and can organize to fight for them is where the real success takes place. And this is what the challenge is ahead. But I also think we have a very special challenge as media women, because even after Cairo, most of the mainstream media has tried to co-opt what we won in Cairo and what we went to Cairo for, saying that the women made a big contribution to make policies to reduce fertility more human. And that's not what we went to Cairo for. We went to change the paradigm of the relationship between population and development, recognizing, for example, that empowerment of women is not a means to achieve an end of reduction of population, but that the empowerment of women is a right in itself.
From the Wings Archive, 1995, that was Maria Suarez from Costa Rica-based Feminist International Radio Endeavor, describing women's strategies around the International Conference on Population and Development in 1994. The radio project, known as FIRE for short, started as a daily program on shortwave Radio for Peace International out of Costa Rica, and later pioneered broadcasting through streaming online. It was bilingual, and its Spanish name was Radio Feminista Internacional. Maria published a book documenting its history under the title Women's Voices on Fire. She also vividly described her media experiences in a Zoom-recorded event at maternalgifteconomymovement.org. That's maternalgifteconomymovement.org. Look for Salon Number 63, Feminist Radio, The Gift of Women's Voices. Wings thanks all our supporters, including your local community radio stations, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, whose books include the anthology Women and the Gift Economy, A Radically Different Worldview is Possible. For Wings, I'm Frieda Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.
The Canadian Human Trafficking Hotline is now live nationwide, offering a confidential multilingual service 24/7 to connect human trafficking victims and survivors with social and emergency services. We welcome calls if you have tips, concerns, or questions about human trafficking in your community. If you need help or want to help stop human trafficking, call the hotline now at 1-833-900-1010.
About